part of it, like the fear, Ruli whispered, in our heads.
There's one here.
Jula pointed at a limed skeleton sprawled between two rocks.
Just the one like those two in the niche. The rest were illusion.
Nona turned towards the object at the limits of the lantern light and advanced with Ara. It was a ring, 4 yards across, standing upright with the lowest part of it buried in the stone floor. The ring itself was the thickness of a roof beam, and covered in flowstone, stalagmites and stalactites decorating the top of the arch.
What is it?
Jula stopped, and they all stopped with her. Something the missing left? Nona said.
No.
Ruli looked at her round-eyed.
Anyone could have put it here, Jula said. The people who built the pillars.
Sister Rule said it takes 200 years for a stalactite to grow an inch, Nona said.
How long would you say those were?
2 feet? 3?
Ruli stepped closer.
That's the best part of 10,000 years since someone knocked them off last.
Nona advanced too, her voice a whisper.
We should push on.
She looked past the ring to the back of the cavern where 2 tunnels led off, one rising, one falling.
Which way, Jula? Shouldn't we?
Jula returned her gaze to the ring.
It's been there forever. I need to see where Hesse died.
She saw the others doubt.
It's the key to finding Yisht and recovering the ship heart,
she added, with more confidence than she felt.
That one,
Jula nodded towards the tunnel heading up. Ara led off, touching her fingers to her forehead every now and then.
Did you come back for me?
She muttered as Nona came close.
I tripped over you.
They walked on in silence.
Your friends will get you killed. I don't understand why you need them.
Keok ran along the veins of her right arm, faint and petulant.
Especially the other two. They're weak. There's no gain.
Nona thought about it, about the ties that bound her to those she had named her friends. Sister Pan's words returned to her, how she described the path and the threads that bound each thing to every other thing, a web of influence and dependence, invisible, eternal, ever-changing.
I've been at this convent 5 years, Keot, and I've learned to believe in something more than myself. All this time, Wheel has been banging on about the ancestor, about all those who came before and have gone beyond. But the larger thing I believe in is what's here and now. Those novices are my friends. I would die for them. I would face a terror for them that I haven't the courage to stand against on my own behalf.
Even with Jula's instinct for finding her way below ground, making progress still proved a difficult business. Time and again they had to double back, seeking alternative routes where a passage grew too narrow or too steep, or turned and led away into the depth of the rock. It felt to Nona like days, and was perhaps hours.
I think we're getting close,
Jula said.
I think we're running out of oil.
Ara held the lantern up and shook it to hear the slosh.
5 more minutes,
Jula pointed ahead with her Noiguan knife.
We risked our lives to come this far. We might not get another chance.
If we lose our light, we can still die down here,
Ara said. But she followed on. At the limit of their illumination, the tunnel before them narrowed, then opened into what might be a sizable chamber. Nona had no idea where they were with respect to the convent, but Jula's talent for navigation had proved trustworthy so far. The sound of running water greeted them, the air thick with the smell of earth and rot.
What are those?
Ara raised the lantern and stepped into the chamber.
I don't know,
Nona stared at the ceiling. Strange stalactites hung in twisting profusion, like nothing they had seen before.
"They're roots," Ruli said. "We're below the center oak."
Nona kept her gaze on the mass of roots. Towards the rear of the cavern they stretched to the ground and snaked across it. Just feet ahead of her, roots reached so low she could almost touch one with a raised arm. For years she had walked the novice cloister, chased the others, sat on the benches chattering, and all that time this void had waited in darkness only yards beneath them. Perhaps people were like that too. A void had waited behind Clara's smile, a dark space where unspoken thoughts had festered and grown into betrayal.
"Look!"
Ara stood at the side of the chamber beside one of five round, dark openings. Now she held her lantern closer. Nona could see that the opening looked hand-hewn, and that corroded iron bars blocked it off. The novices gathered beside Ara.
"It's a cell!"
Ruli pulled on one of the bars. Her hand came away thick with rust.
"Check the others," Jula said.
They were all cells, each a space hewn just 2 yards back into the rock, sealed with bars and a locked gate. The second and third held bones, complete skeletons blackened with age.
"This is a prison,"
Nona whispered, remembering the recluse, the cave where she and the abbess had been kept before their trial.
"An oubliette."
Jula's voice was a whisper too.
"They put people here to forget them. Those skeletons we found,"
Ruli frowned, "might not have been people who came into the caves and got lost. They might have been novices or sisters who escaped the cells, but never saw the light again." Nona tried to imagine it, rotting away down here just yards beneath the novice cloisters where girls ran and laughed and played. Nothing but the stillness of rock and root. She suppressed a shudder. A place to forget. Did anyone in the convent still remember it existed? To one side of the cavern in a low-roofed alcove, a pool nestled, fed by a small stream escaping a crack. "In the ceiling?" Nona pointed. A circular shaft led up.
"What's in it?"
Ara squinted. She crouched at the pool's edge, holding the lantern above the water. The light's reflection on the rocky ceiling made a wonder of slowly shifting patterns.
"Is that a bucket?"
Nona frowned and squinted at something hanging in the shaft.
"It's the well," Jula said. "The well?"
Nona didn't know of a well close to the novice cloisters.
"The back of the laundry. That little room. They get the washing water there when the rain barrels are dry."
Nona wondered if those trapped in the cells might sometimes have heard the outside world echoing down the well shaft. She shuddered again.
"We need to go, now," Ara said, "or we'll be feeling our way in the dark."
With new meaning attached to the old bones along the way, the novices needed no further encouragement. They left without a word. Chapter 14. Abbess Glass. Abbess Glass stood in the shadow beside her study window, watching the novices of Red Class hurry towards Academia Tower, clutching their slates. She rubbed Malkin behind the ears. The old cat tolerated this and watched with her. At the back of the class, little Elsie, just 8 years old, scurried to catch up. She had been given over to the convent by her mother, a metal worker recently widowed, and struggling to keep her younger children housed and fed. A sigh escaped her. Abel had been 8 when he died. Her son would have been a man now, perhaps with children of his own. It still hurt to think of it, a physical ache in her chest. Glass struck her breastbone, willing the pain away, and turned from the window. Sister Tala waited before the portrait of Abbess Mace, she of the miracle. Abbess Glass had forgotten the nun was there and noticed her with a start. Tallow showed no more emotion than the portrait. If not for the wisp of her breath escaping in the cold air, she might have been just another painting. Though it would take quite an artist to capture her hardness and the dark intensity of her eyes.
"It won't be long before the Inquisitors want to read the Grey Reports. You know that."
Sister Tallow glanced towards the door.
"I'm surprised there's not a watcher in your house yet."
Abbess Glass gave a grim smile.
"Brother Pelter has suggested it. I declined." "And the Grey Reports?" "I doubt they will prove of much use to the Inquisition." "Encryption's no good. They'll just demand the cipher,"
Sister Tallow said.
"Even so,"
Abbess Glass spread her hands.
"You could appeal to Nevis. He could still get them out of here,"
Tallow said,
"before they get their teeth into anything."
"Ah, sister." Abbess Glass reached out to pat Tallow's shoulder. The nun stiffened, but let the familiarity pass. She wasn't much different to Malkin in that respect.
"Don't you teach the girls that sometimes you have to let your opponent get a good tight grip before you can use it against them?" "As a last resort, Abbess. It's better to get the grip yourself."
Abbess Glass shrugged, then shivered.
"The Derns are landing again, in force, spreading along the southern margins. The Scythrol armies are at both their borders, though more of them at the one we care about. The ice has advanced another mile since last year's ranging, on both fronts. The Emperor is squeezed on all sides. Our options are running out at a startling rate, old friend. All we need now, as they say, is for the moon to fall." "And Sister Kettle?"
Sister Tallow moved to the window. She stood staring across the convent.
"She's not safe here. Pelter will snap her up. I'm surprised he hasn't already. And what Apple might do then, I couldn't say, only that it would not be pretty. I need Kettle here. But too many of the Greys are on missions. The things I've set in motion, the uncertainties. Sister Kettle is my reserve. Her skills are too valuable to waste. Her condition a good excuse to keep her close. It's her condition that will see Pelter take her off to the Tower of Inquiry in chains, Abbess." "The operative word there is see, Tallow dear. He will not see her. She will remain hidden, but close. And this business with Nona, she'd trial in the cloister." "Nona is red to her core. She was never going to pass the trial. Not in Thabor Square, not here. It will do her no harm to fail at something. We all have to get used to that. Even me."
A knock at the door.
"Come."
Sister Spoon leaned in through the doorway, the ancestor's tree dangling from her neck in the form of a silver pendant, branches above, a single taproot reaching below.
"Sister Rock says there are pilgrims massing on the Vinery Stair, calling for the Agatha."
"I'm sure Novice Zoe will be delighted." "What do you mean by massing, sister?"
Abbess Glass waved to Sister Tallow, letting her go. There would be a class of girls wanting instruction on how better to beat each other senseless.
"Hundreds, Abbess."
Sister Spoon stepped aside to let Sister Tallow leave.
"There are said to be food riots in the Verity slums. People want reassurance. They want the Agatha. Unfortunately, we have Zol."
Abbess Glass folded her arms across her stomach.
"Have Sister Wheel go down and preach at the crowd. An hour or two of that should clear them."
She chewed her lip.
"Send some bread down to feed any that are in real need. Children first. Take it along the cart way and serve it out on the Verity Road. That way the food's associated with leaving rather than with waiting on our doorstep."
"Yes, Abbess."
Sister Spoon withdrew. Malkin slinked out at her heels. An appointment with a rat somewhere, no doubt. The door closed, and Abbess Glass found herself looking at the portrait that she had for a moment imagined Sister Tallow might be a part of. Abbess Mace. She hadn't seen the faces of any of the portraits in this room for a long time. Years, maybe. They had become part of a fixed background. Something for the eye to slide across. There were lessons to be learned there, though little time remained for lessons. She had told Sister Tallow that all they needed was for the moon to fall. Of course, the secret whispered in the corridors of power was that it had been falling all her lifetime, and that fall was only getting faster. What we need from you now, Abbess Mace, is another miracle. She made a slow turn, taking in the dozen former abbesses whose faces watched her from the walls. Anyone? Abbess Glass returned to her post at the window. Brother Pelter stood at the doorway to the ancestors' dome, letting the ice wind gust past him into the foyer while he stared up at the abbess's house. Come along, brother. Abbess Glass set her fingers to the cold panes before her in their leaded diamonds. Play your part. Chapter 15.
What are you reading? Kettle! I didn't hear you come in.
Nona turned from the heavy tome, grinning. She had worried that Kettle had gone off on another mission without saying goodbye. There had been no sign of her around the convent for days.
I can be light on my feet when I need to be.
Kettle leaned over Nona's shoulder.
St. David? It says here that he travelled the whole circle of the corridor.
Nona placed her bookmark on the page.
That was 500 years ago. It was over 200 miles from the northern ice to the southern ice back then.
Not one I've heard of.
Kettle raised her eyebrows.
Impressive, though.
He visited 3 cities left abandoned by the missing, too. The ice has swallowed them now, though.
Sister Wheel will hate him, Kettle grinned. She can't abide stories about the missing. She says they were animals, nothing more. The church's official position is that they had no links to the ancestors' tree, which makes them animals in a technical sense. But you don't find many horses building themselves a city.
St. David came from the Grey, too. Like me. I don't mean like a Grey sister. The same place as me. And it wasn't the Grey back then, either. It was some of the best farmland in the Empire, and they had a city there. A big town, anyway, called...
Nona started to turn back in search of the name.
Have you thought about how you're going to pass the Shay trial, Nona Grey?
Sister Kettle rolled Nona's last name around her mouth as if savouring it. Nona snorted.
You know what's happening in the cloister, yes? I've got to sneak past Joelle and the rest of Mystic Class unchallenged. Perhaps if I wear a hat and cape, and then climb the centre oak unchallenged, and reach the puzzle box. After that, all I have to do is hide in the branches with every leaf tight-wrapped against the ice wind, and sit there long enough to open it, unchallenged.
Sounds difficult.
Sounds impossible, even if I could still work the shadows.
There's more to the Grey than wrapping yourself in shadow.
Apply yourself to the problem, novice.
Kettle smiled and patted Nona's shoulder.
I have faith.
Nona stayed at the library taking notes on St. David, absorbed by the tales of his wandering. Somehow Bray's voice contrived to wash over her without breaking her concentration. As a result, she arrived at Blade inky-fingered and late.
Novice, nice of you to join us.
Sister Tallow looked around as Nona creaked the doors open, icy gusts lifting her habit around her. The rest of the class were paired on the sand, swords at the ready.
Novice Joelle can shave your head after the bell. I feel she should get to wield a blade this lesson.
She nodded to where Joelle sat on the sidelines, her cane to one side, golden hair boiling around her shoulders, brushed to a high shine. Nona gritted her teeth and ran for the stores to get a weapon. The rest of the lesson passed in a flickering blur of swordplay, Alata gratefully surrendering her place opposite Zol to Nona. The pair of them fought with dedication. Zol, precise, relentless, and without mercy just as usual. Nona, finding her instinctive fear of sharpened steel pushed out by anger at the humiliation waiting for her under Joelle's hands. With the prospect of the Namsis girl holding a cutthroat razor inches from her face, Nona found Zol armed with a sword, a less intimidating prospect.
Good!
Sister Talu's voice inserted itself into a gap in their sparring. Zol and Nona paused, both panting. Mistress Blade used the G-word so rarely that the moment required witnessing. Nona realized she was dripping with sweat and saw that Zol's blade habit was stained red around the site of her last thrust, the blunted point of her blade having penetrated deep enough to make the Ice Triber bleed. Looking down, Nona saw she sported two similar injuries.
Ha!
Zol launched another attack. Nona dived into the space between heartbeats, deep as she had ever been. Even so, the fight seemed blindingly fast, swords clashing, parrying, twisting, the sharp adjustment of feet, the stuttering advances and retreats. Their blades met perhaps 20 times before Zol dropped into an unexpected leg swipe. Nona jumped it. Almost. They crashed together, snarling, blades crossed between them, both pressing close, and leapt apart, feet bracing to rush in once again, sand piling up behind them.
Break!
Sister Talo called. All around them, the other novices watched, amazed. Apart from the dropping of jaws, none of them had had time to move.
Good,
Talo repeated.
Changing rooms!
There, Zol heaved in a breath. Was that a bell?
Nona hadn't heard it either. She grinned. An echo of it showed on Zol's lips. The Ice Triber pushed back sweaty hair and turned for the changing room.
Nona!
Sister Talo pointed to the chair that Joelle had vacated.
When you're finished here, Nona, have Sister Rose look at those injuries.
The nun walked across to Joelle, now standing beside the chair, and handed her the razor.
If you cut her, Joelle, you'll be her sparring partner next lesson.
Sister Talo relieved Nona of her training sword and went to stow it away. Nona took her place in the chair without a word, staring straight ahead.
A close shave will make it easier to wear a wig for the Shea trial.
Joelle held the back of Nona's head, lifting the razor to Nona's brow, the steel cold on her skin.
You might get past us as a blonde.
The razor scraped, and a chunk of black hair fell into Nona's lap.
Slice her throat. Say she tried to kill you.
Keot flowed along the veins and tendons in Nona's wrist.
No!
For a moment the idea tempted her, Keot's violence bleeding through. At least Nona hoped it was just that.
Yes!
Keot moved across her downturned palm, a scarlet scald. He twitched in her fingers, trying to take control.
No!
Nona forced him back. Joelle worked quickly with a sure hand, and although Nona kept her teeth gritted, her body tensed to spring into action. It was only hair that came down, rather than blood. With a surprisingly gentle touch, Joelle tilted Nona's head forward to scrape away the last of the hair from the base of her neck. Nona's head felt cold and strange.
Of course, you've no more chance of passing the trial than you do of taking the grey.
Another scrape of the blade.
Any more than you stand a chance of catching Yisht. It's been, what, almost 3 years now? Your little peasant friend will just have to go as unrevenged as she was unmourned.
Nona snarled and thrust her head back, intending to get herself cut if that was the price of a sparring session with Joelle. But the razor was no longer there.
I don't have to be fast if you're going to be predictable. Now do I?
Joelle stepped away, laughing that same tinkling laugh that Ara and Terra had shared in the Mensis mansion. Something as artificial to Nona's ear as it was ugly. Chapter 16.
You want me to throw you in the sinkhole?
Yes. Nona followed in Darla's wake, out across the fractured stone towards the yawning mouth of the glass water.
In an ice wind?
Yes.
You'll freeze to death.
Darla had a point. The wind howled around them. Nona's head was already starting to feel like a solid block of ice. It's a risk I'm prepared to take. At least I won't have to dry my hair. Darla barked a laugh at that and ran a hand over Nona's baldness.
Why do you want me to throw you in?
Darla peered over the edge at the dark waters 40 feet below.
Because you're the strongest.
Nona looked up at her friend. At 15, Darla stood a good 6'9", broad in the chest, her arms thicker than Nona's thighs. Darla sighed.
Let's get this over with.
She reached for Nona.
Not from here.
Nona skipped away from Darla's hand.
Over there.
Pointing, she ran to her chosen spot 10 yards back into the wind. Darla walked after her.
I know you're a shrimp, but I'm not sure I can throw you that far, even wind-assisted.
I'm going to help you, Nona said. Put your hands like this, down low.
She cupped her hands together.
I'll run at you, step in your hands, and you boost me over your head.
Darla spread her arms, palms out.
That's insane.
You said you'd help me out.
Nona hugged herself against the wind's cold.
But...
Darla shook her head and spat out a piece of ice.
What's this for?
Can't tell you. Conflict of interest. I'm protecting you.
Darla pursed her lips, frowning.
Do we have to do it this far back? What if you fall short?
If I fall short, then I'll probably hurt myself.
Can't we start closer?
Darla looked over her shoulder, judging the distance.
We are starting closer. Next time we'll add 5 yards. And there's only so many times I want to jump in today.
0 was the true number.
Ancestor,
Darla spat again.
You're crazy. You know that.
Nona grinned.
Ready?
No.
Darla knelt and put her hands into a stirrup, ready for Nona's lead foot. Nona started to back off. Darla called after her.
Let's at least practice the last few steps.
And so they did. Nona took the last 5 steps of her run in, set her foot into Darla's hands, and Darla launched Nona over her head. Nona landed 2 yards behind her, the force of the impact concertinaing her into a tight haunch about folded legs. They repeated the move 4 times.
Good,
Nona rubbed her aching ankles.
You've got to be even quicker this time. I'll be coming in fast, and I need to keep the speed. Hold your hands higher. Here. I'll jump.
Nona backed off 10 yards and stripped off both shoes, then her range coat, placing them in the lee of a boulder.
You want me to steal a tub of kelp juice?
Yes. Nona followed Ruli towards the vinery.
Nasty, stinking, half-rotted seaweed.
Ruli stopped and peered at Nona as if she might be unwell.
Yes, you can do it. Everyone knows Sister Oak is sweet on you.
Sister Oak,
Ruli sniffed,
appreciates my ledger-keeping skills and the nose I have for wine.
Whatever,
Nona pushed Ruli back into walking.
You can get me a tub?
Of course I can,
Ruli grinned over her shoulder.
There's scores of them at the vinery. Best fertilizer money can buy. Plus, we don't pay for it. It's harvested on the beach at Geron's Crag. I bet the Holy Sisters have a ball at that convent. My pa says most of them stink of seaweed, and the ones that don't smell of fish.
Good.
Hide it for me somewhere easy to get at and let me know.
Nona turned away, stifling a sneeze.
Wait, you're not coming? Got things to do.
You only love me for my rotten seaweed juice.
Ruli pouted.
What do you want it for?
She brightened.
You're going to tip it over Joelle, aren't you? Do it! Do it! It'll turn her hair green. You can't wash it out. Something like that.
And Nona ran off across the courtyard before stopping and calling back.
Oh, and I need a net. A big one, like the ones they use to keep the barrels in the carts.
Nothing to say, Keote? The devil remained silent, sulking across her ribs. The discovery that being submerged in truly ice water distressed him so much was a useful one that Nona vowed to investigate more thoroughly at a later date.
Challenge.
Nona raised her hands.
You got me?
Zol scowled.
It was not difficult.
Across the novice cloister, members of Mystic Class were converging on them, weaving through the other classes who stood chatting in their usual groups, huddled on benches or strolling beneath the galleries. Nona unwound her headscarf.
Got to try.
You're the only novice wearing a headscarf,
Zol said.
And now you're the only bald novice,
Alata said, drawing up to them.
Also, you're the only novice with huge black eyes, like an insect.
Joelle came up behind them from her patrol of the gallery.
And with no shadow.
Croce sneered. Though with the scudding cloud overhead, there were few chances to check for the presence of a person's shadow, even if Nona hadn't still been in the shade of the cloister walls when challenged. Ilani came across, her sneer echoing Croce's. Her arm still splinted from Nona breaking her elbow in the dormitory attack.
It's a pity you'll never reach the tree. I would enjoy watching you try to hide in it.
She waved her good arm at the stark branches that stood like a thousand black fingers raised against the sky.
Good.
Mally was one of the last to arrive.
We can go and eat, at last.
Normally the trial was held in Verity on 7 days, and each candidate got to try her luck across a whole 7 day, from dawn to dusk, with the 6th fail ending the matter. Since the novice cloisters were all but deserted on a 7 day, Nona had managed to get Sister Apple to agree that she might try at any non-lesson time, between breakfast and dinner, one attempt per day, for the 6 days leading up to the 7 day. If she hadn't succeeded by dinner on 6 day, then the trial was over and she had failed. This meant, of course, that none of those on guard duty could get lunch without weakening the defence.
Couldn't you just try before lunch?
Misha trailed in behind Mally, rubbing her stomach.
Everyone knows you're not going to make it, so be a saint and fail early. On the bright side, only 3 more days to go.
Joelle led the rush for the nearest exit.
Challenge you tomorrow, Nona.
That night, in the dark wake of the focus moon, Nona slid from her bed. She took her clothes and crept from the mystic dormitory. On the stairs, she hurried into her habit, tying her shoelaces blind. She stood, struggling into her range coat. Dressed, she went down into the main corridor and stopped outside the grey dormitory. She gave the lightest pull on a thread visible only within the clarity trance and using Aquantel's eyes. Ara opened the door moments later and handed over the lantern and rope they used on their caving trips. A moment later she fetched the hooded lantern kept for trips to the necessary and closed the door while Nona lit the first lantern from the second. Ara retrieved the hooded lantern and returned to her bed. Neither girl spoke during the whole exchange. Nona left the building with the lantern trimmed so low that its glow barely reached past the smoky glass. She crossed the convent, keeping to the walls, avoiding the places where nuns were most likely to patrol. In the bushes outside the sanatorium windows, Nona recovered a heavy rope net and a wooden tub of kelp juice. 5 pints at least. She could smell the stuff as she picked the tub up. Burdened by her load, Nona made her way next to the novice cloisters, taking the path along the west side, a narrow alley between the laundry rooms and the low winery building.
And where might you be off to, young lady?
Nona froze. She turned her head slowly, seeing nothing in the darkness.
Psst!
The hiss made Nona look up. Kettle watched her from the winery roof, crouched low, darkness wound around her in sheets, untouched by the wind.
What are you up to?
No good, Nona said.
Be on your way, then.
Kettle grinned and melted into the night, as if the dark had swallowed her, then poured from the roof like oil. Nona hurried into the novice cloister via the arch through the laundry rooms that filled the south wing. First, she positioned the net, then went to search through the laundry for the well. She found it after trekking through the washing and airing halls. It lay at the bottom of a short stair. The door to the well chamber had been locked, but the device was simple, and Nona soon found the necessary thread to pull in order that it be unlocked. It was a trick Hessa had showed her years before. Nona secured her rope to the wellhead, tied her lantern to her belt, and started to descend. A person of Darla's size would probably not fit. Even Nona felt distinctly trapped as the sides rose around her, dark with slime and nitre. The lantern scraping on stone while she slid down the rope. The faint sounds of running water rose from far below.
"You never sleep,"
Keot grumbled, stretching out along her arm, almost as if yawning.
"What hole have you found to crawl around in now?"
Nona continued down the rope, not bothering to reply. She became aware of the shaft opening up around her without needing to see it. Something about the quality of the sound. She shinned another yard down the rope and looked out across the pool beneath her. The lantern's glow reflected all around her, the light moving across rock walls capturing the ripples. Where the cavern opened out beyond the pool, the forest of the center oak's roots swallowed all illumination. Nona started to swing. Once. Twice. Three times. On the fourth swing, she released the rope and arched her back. She landed in 2 feet of water and stumbled up onto the rocky border. There, she unslung the kelp tub, uncorked it, then took out the cloth she had stuffed in an inner pocket and wetted it with the juice. The stink of the liquid took her breath away.
"Ancestor!"
she spat on the stones.
"This had better work."
Nona approached the nearest root that came low enough to reach and wiped the cloth across it, leaving dark smears of the kelp juice along its length. She moved to the next, then the next. She kept to the fringes, the younger roots. They emerged in sheets from any crack that would let them through the rock. In the midst of the cavern, the thickest and oldest roots reached the floor and sprawled out across it, but those were stone-clad. Within half an hour, Nona discovered that however much fighting you might do, any work that required you to hold your arms above your head soon became exhausting. Added to the fatigue in her arms was the fact that no matter what care she took, the kelp juice still managed to drip on her. One drop stung in her left eye. Another found its way into her mouth and filled it with a sour foulness. Keot made no further comment, perhaps having fallen back to sleep. The lantern had started to gutter by the time Nona let up. She had used most of the kelp juice and all of her patience. Stinking and bone-tired, she took herself back to the pool, put the lantern down, and steeled her nerves.
7 ice baths in a day!
She plunged in and thrashed about, gasping, hoping to rid her habit of the kelp stink. Keot's wordless howls of outrage provided just enough warmth to keep her from freezing. After that, the long climb back up the well shaft nearly defeated her, but it did at least get her muscles working and her blood flowing once more. Nona hauled herself over the low walls surrounding the well and slithered to the floor where she lay gasping. After a minute, she picked up her lantern, recovered her rope, and set off to brave the ice wind one more time in a wet habit.
"A tissue!
Sounds nasty,"
Darla rumbled from her bed, just a mound beneath the covers.
"A tissue,"
Nona repeated herself. Grey fingers of morning light reached across the dormitory.
It's your own damn fault.
Darla rolled over, muttering to herself.
Part of your next disguise,
Croce called from across the room.
You're going to sneeze your way past us today.
I'm certainly going to try. Nona levered herself up and groaned. It felt as if she had slept for 3 minutes rather than 3 hours. On the floor beside her bed, her habit lay in a heap. Water pooled around it. Nona hung her clothes up to dry and went to breakfast in Darla's second habit, which was more of a tent than a garment, but warmer than her own second habit, which had been patched to the point at which there was more replacement material than original. Sister Rail devoted the morning's academic class to a history of Dernish invasions and the occasional riposts from past emperors. Although she lined up a host of complex political reasons behind each act of aggression, it seemed to Nona that the root cause was the same in every case. The ice kept advancing. If you squeezed any nation north and south, it must expand east and west, or spend so many lives trying that the land remaining to it is sufficient.
A tissue!
Nona tried to hold the next sneeze in. She focused her will, reached for her serenity, gritted her teeth.
A tissue! Cover your mouth, girl!
Sister Rail stalked towards her. Nona lowered the hand she'd had covering her mouth, biting back both her retort and the desire to wipe that hand down the front of the approaching nun.
How many battle barges were beached in the Dernish invasion at Songra Beach?
Sister Rail peered down at her.
Carry her to the window and throw her out.
Nona couldn't help but smirk at Keogh's suggestion.
You find this amusing, novice?
No, Mistress Academic. I was trying not to sneeze. Nona pressed her lips together. And it was 300.
When?
The 30th year of Emperor Tristan?
Nonsense!
Sister Rail turned and stalked back towards her desk.
It was the 31st year.
When Bray told, the class made for the door with an indecent haste. Only Zol, Darla, and Nona took their time. On each day of the Shade Trial, two novices were allowed a day's respite from guard duty. 4 day was Zol and Darla's day off, and no penalties incurred by the guards on post would fall upon their shoulders. Zol walked out after the others.
Good luck today.
What have you heard?
Nona fought back a rising panic.
Heard? Zol turned. Nothing but footsteps in the night. But it is enough to know you. You will make your move today. You would not strike against a friend, Nona Grey.
She shrugged and left.
Better get on with it, Darla said. This is insane, though. I did mention that.
You did. And Nona led off after Zol. They went directly to the novice cloisters, the icy gusts swirling around them as the corridor wind struggled to reassert itself. Mystic class would be arrayed within the cloister now, ready to challenge Nona the moment she set foot inside. Darla followed Nona into the laundry wing, ignoring the main archway into the cloister. They went through the washroom, past Sister Mop and Sister Spear, one scrubbing, the other at work with the mangle.
Where do you think you're going?
Sister Spear looked up as Nona started to climb the wooden stairs to the second story. Nona paused and met the woman's sharp stare.
I'm on Shade Trial, Sister.
And the big girl?
Sister Spear had recently joined from Geryn's Crag in the west and struggled with names.
She's old. Beat her and leave her bleeding.
She's my prisoner, Nona said.
Prisoner?
Sister Spear frowned. Nona nodded.
Mistress Shade has instructed us at length on the value of hostages. I can't afford to let her out of my sight.
Sister Spear waved them away, shook her head and returned to her mangle work.
Novices.
The floor above had been given over to the storage of linens, salt for the wash, and unspecified crates of the type that looked too important to throw away, but too boring to open. Nona ignored it all and went to one of the outer windows. The shutters protested with a squeal of rusty hinges.
don't like this bit.
Darla peered out at the drop.
I won't let you down.
Nona patted the rope at her hip, then slipped out onto the window ledge. A quick jump and scramble saw her onto the roof, one flaw blade skewering a roof tile to gain purchase. Crouching low, Nona hurried towards the chimney above the boiling room. She kept below the roof ridge and looped her rope around the narrow smokestack. Returning to the roof's edge, she dangled the rope for Darla.
Come on!
She sneezed and swore. Darla made a meal of the climb, sending more than a few tiles crashing to the flagstones below. If the Mystic Class guards had truly believed Nona stood even a small chance of success, they would have recruited eyes among the other classes and stationed them outside. But Nona had chosen the least overlooked side of the building, and the ice wind kept novices from lingering outside. And neither Joelle nor her friends seemed to consider her a threat. Darla came to lie beside Nona, peering around the chimney and over the roof ridge into the cloister yard.
How in creation!
Darla's mouth hung open.
The tree!
The centre oak stood decked in green, the thick multitude of its leaves tossed this way and that by the blustery wind. The evening before it had been a stark cluster of sticks, every leaf wrapped tight against the cold.
It's called horticulture, Nona said. A smelly business.
So, when do we do it?
Wait. They held at the roof ridge, waiting.
How long for?
Not long.
Look.
Nona nodded across to the less used west entrance. A novice came running through, hair covered by a nun's headdress, face down, weaving past the first girl in her way.
Challenge!
Mally gave chase. The novice kept running.
Challenge!
Croce surged into the girl's path and seized her shoulders, shaking her.
She said challenge, you stupid!
The headdress fell away, revealing Jula, nervous and flushed. Incorrect challenge? They all miss a meal. Nona said. A second novice came in at a run through the main entrance this time, steering all eyes from Nona's side of the cloister. Darla started to rise.
Shouldn't we?
Wait. Nona pulled her down. Down below, Joelle's shriek cut the air.
It's a trick!
She raced towards the new intruder.
Check her eyes! Check the eyes!
The new girl wore a headdress and a scarf bound around her face. She moved like lightning.
It's her! It's her!
Misha cried as the girl dodged past.
Challenge! Challenge!
Joelle reached them.
Got you!
Her triumph proved short-lived. Ruli pulled her scarf aside, grinning beneath eyes that showed no white.
How?
Darla whispered. Blackwort drops. It lasts a day or two, Nona said. They all lose another meal. A third girl burst from a window in the east range, headdress in place, scarf across her face.
Wait! Wait!
Joelle screamed.
Let her get in the sun!
Mystic class novices closed from all sides.
Watch for a shadow!
As the new girl broke from the shade of the gallery, half a dozen challenges went up as one.
No shadow! Challenge!
The girl skidded to a halt. Ilani snatched the headdress from her. Golden hair spilled out.
Lose a meal, Nona whispered.
How?
Darla sounded exasperated, even though it wasn't her meals being cut.
Ara's great at shadow work, Nona said.
She just sucked it up into her eyes, making them like mine.
Nona rolled to the side and started to retreat down the slope of the roof.
Get ready.
Screams went up. It would be the four red-class novices Nona had recruited. With heads and faces covered, they were to rush in after Ara was caught. One from the west entrance, one from the main entrance, one from Ara's window, and the last 10 yards behind the first, all of them screaming like banshees and weaving to avoid capture. In the chaos, the defenders might not notice how short the decoys were. Darla stood up and bent over with her back to the chimney, and hands cupped almost a yard above the tiles.
This is still insane. You'll die.
In service to the ancestor, death is but a kiss. Nona quoted Sister Wheel with a grin, and from the edge of the roof she began to run at Darla with all the speed she could muster. Nona let the world slow around her even as she accelerated up the slope. The high screaming of the little novices tumbled down the registers. She leapt for Darla, lead foot aimed at her cupped hands. Shoe met fingers and Darla heaved upwards as they'd practiced, lifting with all the power of her back, shoulders and arms. Nona bit down on the terrified yell that so badly wanted to escape her and flew through the air, arms pinwheeling. Below her, struggling through the moment, the novices from Red Class tried to evade the mystic guards. Perhaps more challenges rang out in the chaos. Nona couldn't tell. Sister Apple would know. Nobody had seen Apple, but they knew she was there, watching. With their attention on the running novices at the far side of the cloister, none of those in the square looked up to see Nona's flight. The green wall of the center oak's foliage rushed up to greet her, along with 100 opportunities for being impaled.
"I've missed! I've missed!" Nona could see nothing but leaves. "Ancestor, protect me!"
She had no time to say the words, but they ran behind her lips. In the next moment, Nona was crashing through twigs and greenery. Perhaps she added her screaming to the mix in the cloister. She was too scared to know. The net took her by surprise, even though she had been trying to aim for it the whole time. Her arms shot through the holes. The ropes lashed her face. The branches to which she had secured the corners the night before now creaked and groaned in protest, swaying all around her. For what seemed an age, Nona lay entangled in the net's embrace, panting out the panic that had filled her during the plunge. Gradually, she became aware of the shouts and screams in the surrounding cloister. Dying away now. Somewhere close at hand, Joelle was cursing.
"The bitch! 4 wasted challenges! Watch everything! She'll try again! She'll be in the next wave! This is cheating!"
Joelle again.
"She's supposed to be disguised as other people, not have other people disguised as her!"
Nona lay high in the arms of the great oak, cocooned in green.
"This is a stupid game."
"Shut up, Kiot."
"Well, it is."
Very slowly, Nona began to untangle herself. The puzzle box lay where Sister Apple had placed it that morning, low down in a fork of major branches. The leaves that close to the ground were not thick enough to hide her. It sat there, taunting her. A cubic box maybe 6 inches on a side, a thing of black and white. Perhaps a bone body inlaid with ebony, a handful of small locks and catches on each side.
"Even if you could get it unnoticed, they would see it gone before you had time to open it, and then they would just challenge the tree."
"I thought you weren't interested in my silly game." Kiot didn't reply, but clearly he hadn't been paying as close attention to Nona's doings this week as she had imagined. She wondered what else he had to occupy his time. Nona fished from her habit the box Ruli had fashioned for her. Damnation! The impact with the net had splintered one side, breaking away some of the fire-blackened washers that Ruli had used in place of locks. The body was bleached boxwood, the black design painted on with a tarry mix. It bore only a passing resemblance to the puzzle box below. But if Sister Apple had taught them anything about disguise, it was that people saw what they expected to see. Nona looped her string around the hook at the corner of her fake box, then clambered through the branches, keeping high. It took a while, and she was thankful for the wind. For without it, her passage through the branches would have been betrayed by the localized motion of the leaves. At last, she reached a position 5 yards above the box, where the foliage was still thick enough to conceal her. Anchored by one hand, she used the other to dangle her second string. This one ended in a noose, with the lead fishing weight hung just above the loop, something from the endless mystery of Ruli's pockets, suggested to stop the string fluttering to the wind's tune. Without the unrelenting grapple-tossing on their caving expedition, Nona would have lost heart. believing that if you didn't manage to snag something on the 10th attempt, you weren't ever going to do it. It took an age before the loop encompassed the box and didn't slip away when she pulled.
Go on.
If it slides out and falls, it's all over.
Do it.
Before she could raise the string, Nona felt a familiar tickle at the back of her nose.
No.
She screwed her eyes tight, bit down hard, concentrated the formidable power of her will so hard on not sneezing that her face hurt with the twisting of it. Still the tickle grew.
No! Damnation! Kiot! Do something!
What will you give me?
He burned along the veins of her neck, stretching out across her cheek.
Anything to stop the sneeze!
Anything? You'll kill for me?
What? No!
Kiot retreated. The sneeze rose, unstoppable, coming to summon a barrage of challenges.
All right, I'll kill, but I choose who.
Kiot hesitated, then burned into her nose and down her throat. It hurt, but when he surfaced, the sneeze had gone.
You should kill the one called Jula.
Yisht. I'll kill Yisht.
Kiot made no reply, but she could feel his disapproval. Even so, as he retreated across her shoulders, the devil felt more deeply bedded in her flesh, and it wasn't a good feeling. Nona pursed her lips, then returned her attention to the box, still lassoed despite how much her hand had trembled when she fought the sneeze. She pulled gently, then with more force. The box shifted, twisted, lifted.
Yes!
As it rose, the box began to spin, the kind of motion that would draw the eye. Ara had been waiting for this moment. Ruli, too. Ruli, lounging inside the cloister, stood and ran across the main entrance. Ara, waiting outside, charged in once more, head covered.
Just stop her!
Joelle yelled. They weren't supposed to lay a finger on anyone, only to challenge. The person on trial had to stop when challenged. They would all lose another meal over it, probably to be added to the 2 hungry days they had yet to find out about, earned when Nona reached the tree. Nona lifted the box. 3 more days, not 2, Joelle, and began to lower the substitute. By the time the novices had wrested Ara's headscarf from her, in a struggle that put several of them on the ground, Nona had lowered the fake box into place and slipped the double string free of the hook. It looked deeply unconvincing to her, and she turned her attention to the real item, certain that she would have only moments before a challenge rang out, aimed at the tree.
Keep hold of her!
Joelle was presumably tired of catching the same impostors over again.
And the other one, Ruler, is she?
The box was surprisingly heavy. It didn't rattle, and didn't even seem to have hinges. Each of the 6 faces bore 3 locks. Nona clambered to a more secure position where she could sit with both hands free, secured by her legs. She called on her clarity and defocused her vision to bring her thread sight to the fore. 1 billion green threads laced the tree itself, every branch and twig joined to every other, every leaf, every part of every leaf, interlocked in a web of life joined with slow, sure, vegetable certainty. Nona focused on the first lock, a keyhole set into a disc of black iron, not that dissimilar to Ruli's charred washers. Locks I can do. Novices were introduced to locks in shade during their mystic class years, though younger novices often acquired sets of picks and practiced around the convent. Nona had never had the money for picks or the inclination to spend time on the fiddly business, but she knew a few thread tricks. The first lock surrendered quickly. Finding its thread took a little hunting and a lot of concentration, but once pulled, the satisfying click followed immediately. The second lock proved a nightmare. It had 2 threads connected in some complex way Nona couldn't fathom. Pulling one unlocked something, pulling the other unlocked a different thing, and locked the first thing. Eventually, she managed to pull both together in a way that sounded as if it did the job. Only 16 left to go. Nona looked out into the leaves, seething around her. Down below, the cloister sounded almost...